We have 2 hours left. That was a great hour with Jerry Reynolds and Dave Yeager. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. College football, we are less than 48 hours away from the start of the Final Four. Of course, Washington and Alabama. And then a little bit later, it'll be Clemson and Ohio State. And I really think, and I don't know if you had a chance to listen to my conversation with Houston Nutt on the Rome show yesterday from CBS Sports, but, you know, he's a longtime coach at Arkansas and Ole Miss, and I said, you know, I really think one of the keys for Washington is not to get blown out early, and by that I mean that this is the brightest of lights that these guys, Alabama's in this situation every year, and to me, the key for Washington is to stay in the game early because Alabama's got that ability to run you off the field because they've done it. You know what I'm saying? This that you want to talk about Washington. They are definitely moving up in caliber of opponent.
Yeah, and if you can it's going to do so much for the collective consciousness of the group and camaraderie and confidence to be able to say, you know, we can get them in a three and out, or we can move the ball and maybe get a field goal early.
All right, let's talk more about this with Rich Sermonello, college football editor and reporter for Campus Insiders. Rich, Grant Napier and Doug Christie, how are you today?
Doing well. How about you guys?
We're doing good. What do you think about that? I mean, I'm looking at Washington, Alabama, and, you know, we always talk about, well, what's the key and what's the key? I just believe for them to feel like they belong, and I'm not saying they don't, but my point is Alabama, that front seven and the problems that they can cause, I just think I wonder how important it is for Washington, you know, when the second quarter begins to just still be in the game and still staying afloat.
There's no question about it. I think confidence is going to be a concern Saturday afternoon. Washington obviously would never admit it, but I think when you go up against Alabama, defending national champ, three-time SEC champ, Nick Saban across the field, in Atlanta no less, this is a tall order for Chris Peterson. He has the talent. I think that's a key for people to understand. He has the talent to compete with anyone in the country. But the specter of Alabama, the confidence that they have, the fact that they've had a month to prepare for this game is a very daunting task for the Huskies.
When you look at Nick Saban, Chris Peterson, and the fact that he was at Boise State and trying to get that team to the next level, then going and beating a team like Oklahoma, is he probably one of the best coaches to face an Alabama team like this and get a Washington team prepared?
I think the best one right now would have to be Urban Meyer. He'll obviously have that opportunity if Ohio State beats Clemson to face Alabama once again.
Yeah.
Beat the Tide 2 years ago. So Urban Meyer is the best. Dabo Swinney did a very good job at Clemson last year, nearly beating Alabama in the national title game. But I would put Chris Peterson in about the top half a dozen or so coaches in terms of preparation. He has traditionally done a very good job of preparing his teams. He's been a giant killer in the past. And again, I can't stress enough how much talent this Washington team has. Just because they're not on par with Alabama man for man, this is still one of the five or so best teams in the country in terms of next level talent. I'm talking about the secondary led by Buda Baker and Sidney Jones. The front seven is outstanding. You got Jake Browning and all of his weapons. I actually think Washington has the better pass catchers than Alabama, which is saying a lot. So, you know, Chris Peterson has that talent, and in just 3 years, he's done a remarkable job. I think we've sort of forgotten how far Washington has come. This is a program that has not even won the Pac-12 since 2000.
Rich, when you talk about Jake Browning and his receivers, then that gets you to the next question. Will Jake Browning have time to throw the ball to his receivers? Talk about the offensive line of Washington against this front of Alabama and what a challenge that poses.
Yeah, listen, anybody's going to have a problem against that Alabama front seven. I mean, that is a grown-up, next level, led by Jonathan Allen, best defensive player in the country. They're going to get pressure on anyone in the country. But, guys, I'll go back to November the 12th. As I watched, and you probably watched that game between Washington and USC, that's the one that gives me the most trepidation because Washington really struggled at the point of attack. They were dominated by Clancy Pendergast's defense, which is very good at USC, but nowhere near as talented as Alabama's. That, to me, is the biggest problem. As you contemplate, is this a game in the second half? As fans, we all hope it will be. My biggest concern is, How do they handle the front seven of Alabama? Does Jake Browning have time? And can Browning play well against a talented secondary? Because the last two opportunities he had, USC, and then in the Pac-12 title game against that Colorado secondary, he was not at his best. Those are my big concerns heading into Saturday afternoon.
When you talk about the matchup versus USC and then you compare it to what we see now with Alabama, is it the size and strength or the athleticism? Because the athleticism of USC seemed to shine through against Washington. Would that be your trepidation?
Yeah, and I would take it that's a great question. I would take it a notch higher because USC had that speed. Rasheem Green up front, the active linebackers like Porter Justin and Cameron Smith, those players are very talented underclassmen that will continue to get better. But Alabama is significantly better. They're not just the strength of a Dalvin Tomlinson and a Darren Payne in the middle, Jonathan Allen on the outside, but it's also the speed that will come off the edge from their hybrid defensive ends, outside linebackers like Ryan Anderson and Tim Williams. That, to me, is a big, big concern. Caleb McGarry is the right tackle of Washington. Trey Adams is on the left side. He's an all-star, first-team All-Pac-12, did a good job this year. But McGarry, at times, is going to get matched up against way too much speed. And Jake Browning is not the kind of quarterback that has typically given problems to the Tide in the past, someone who could make plays outside of the pocket, even if he's not a dual threat. But you look at a Chad Kelly over the past couple of years at Ole Miss, Deshaun Watson obviously last year. Athletic quarterbacks can give problems to Alabama. That is not Jake Browning.
That's a great point. You know, if I told you that Alabama would not win the national championship of the other three teams, who would you say has the best chance of beating Alabama?
Yeah, also a good question because I'm kind of torn on Clemson and Ohio State at this point. To me, you know, you put those two into a Vitamix, you turn it on, you could really pick one or the other. Those teams are so equal. I would have to say Clemson because they have the best quarterback of the Final Four teams in Deshaun Watson. They have a roster that was there last year. They're more experienced than Ohio State at this point. And of all the units outside of Tuscaloosa, I am absolutely in love with the Clemson defensive line. I think that's the unit, more than any other, more than the Ohio State secondary, that is really going to shine Saturday night. So I would say Clemson, but just by a razor-thin margin.
When you talk about Clemson, and listen, I get the fact they had one loss, but listen, they should have lost, and I know should have, could have. You know, they should have lost to North Carolina
sure.
State at home, all
yep.
right? They had really games earlier in the season where I was like, they're not that impressive. You know, at Auburn, they barely mm-hmm. won. They didn't play
Troy.
Great against Troy. I mean, I can go on down the list. Should I not pay attention to that? I mean, were they just kind of, and now they've got their mojo when you look at what they've done to end the season? Just there were a lot of games where I wasn't that impressed with Clemson this year.
I totally agree. I mean, right up until that Pittsburgh loss, 43-42, I agree. Maybe I'm giving them too much credit, but I think certain teams, you guys have been around sports forever, you know what I'm talking about. Certain teams rise to the occasion in the biggest games. Clemson was on the precipice of a national championship last year. I don't want to dismiss the fact that they played poorly against weak competition. You mentioned NC State, Troy, as two good examples. But I think Clemson is the kind of team that now that the lights are on, now that they're back in the playoff, I think you'll see closer to the team that played against Florida State, South Carolina, even to a lesser extent, Virginia Tech, which was an awkward performance as well, 42-35 in the ACC championship game. But when you look at the talent, pure talent, they match up equal to Ohio State. So I think both of those teams would have a legitimate shot. I wouldn't bet against Alabama, but I think either could take down the Tide January 9th in Tampa.
When you look at Ohio State versus Clemson, you said that they're pretty equally matched. If you could pick out one area that you're thinking, because it sounds like you're leaning more towards Clemson winning, where would that be that Clemson would be superior to Ohio State?
Yeah, I'll give you two. I mentioned the defensive line. It is really just unique talent. Christian Wilkins, Dexter Lawrence. Dexter Lawrence is he's the prototypical dancing bear on a defensive line, 6'5", 340 pounds, moves like he's maybe about 290. So he's a unique talent. I really like the Clemson defensive line. Ohio State's offensive line, if you guys go back to the Penn State State game. Good offensive line led by Pat Elflein, the Remington Trophy winner. But at times they were susceptible. Second half of the Penn State game, they were dominated by the Nittany Lions. I could see a little bit of that on Saturday night. But for me, the big difference is the passing game. Deshaun Watson, better than JT Barrett, who I think had an awkward junior season. And the receivers of Clemson, Mike Williams, Deion Kane, Jordan Leggett, the tight end, far superior to Ohio State. So I think in a close game, somewhere in the neighborhood of 30-27, 28-24, end of the game, close. I want Deshaun Watson with the ball in his hands. He's as clutch as anyone in the country. That, for me, is the difference.
Hmm. Rich Sermonello, college football editor, reporter for Campus Insiders. I want to get back to Alabama for a moment. And again, I'm looking for a ballpark figure here. How many first-round picks do you think are on that roster? And then, because, you know, I'm looking at that defense and I'm just going, all right, he's a first-rounder, he's a first-rounder, he's a first-rounder. What do you think the number is going to be?
Are you looking beyond 2017?
Yeah, just, it doesn't have to be in this year's draft. I'm sorry, yes.
It's got to be a dozen.
Wow.
It's got to be a dozen. Because I'll give you names like Jonah Williams, right tackle.
Oh, yeah.
Guarantee. 2 years from now, if he leaves early, 3 years, if he stays through his senior year, he's someone, you know, he's not Reuben Foster. He's not Jonathan Allen. He's not Minkah Fitzpatrick, Calvin Ridley. Those are all first-round draft choices. But you have some of the young kids like a Jonah Williams who are future first-rounders.
And he blocked for Jake Browning at high school here in our area, right, in Sacramento, at Folsom High School.
I didn't realize that. Folsom, California, right?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that until recently. That's a pretty cool nugget.
You know, if I could jump ahead, January 2nd, Rose Bowl, USC, who we mentioned, Penn State, number 5, who could have been in that Final Four. USC playing so well at the end of the season. What do you see in that matchup?
Love the game. I have always been a big Rose Bowl fan of all the bowl games. I think that's always the most spectacular.
Uh-huh.
Love the matchup. Two teams that were as hot as anyone in the country. I think both could have had, certainly more so Penn State, but both could have had an argument to be a part of this Final Four just in terms of their second half body of work. I like USC, and I really like what Clay Helton has done. If you go back to September, there were, you know, really premature buzz that you know, this is the wrong choice. Pat Hayden is gone, and, you know, Lynn Swann is here. We're going to have a new coach. He really regrouped, got the most out of that talent. I mentioned Clancy Pendergast. Defense is playing extraordinarily well. Adoree Jackson on the back end. But Sam Darnold versus Trace McSorley, as good a matchup as we'll see in the postseason.
Yeah.
I give the edge to Darnold. I think he's a big-time quarterback. I think he's a Heisman contender in 2017.
Agreed.
Great game. I like USC.
I know I'm nitpicking here, and I get the fact that the NFL's king. It's just so weird to me that we're talking about these big bowl games not on January 1st, you know?
Yeah.
And by the way, I know we talked about this last year. Maybe you and I didn't talk about it. I have never – the concept of having the Final Four, the semifinal games on New Year's Eve is ludicrous to me. And you saw what happened last year with the ratings. Correct me, is this the last year they're playing on New Year's Eve?
It is. We'll go back to New Year's Day. I could not agree with you more. Last year was a travesty, and then it was compounded by the fact that the powers that be who make these decisions started to give excuses – like Star Wars releases had something
to do
with poor ratings. It was so
ridiculous,
tone deaf to lose sight of the fact last year's games were an hour later. They were 4 o'clock, 8 o'clock East Coast. So for those of us on the East Coast, you had games that were ending right around midnight. It was a ridiculous concept. So this year it ends for the foreseeable future, which I think is good for all fans.
Well, if we don't get to talk to you between now and then, national champion, who's raising the trophy?
You know, I'd rather be predictable and right than cavalier and wrong. So I can't bet against Alabama. I mean, he's the greatest college football coach in history. The defense is impenetrable. I didn't even mention Jalen Hurts, who continues to grow at warp speed, the young Alabama quarterback. I just can't see anybody beating Alabama at this point.
And if they do, would you consider it a mild upset, a big upset? How would you characterize it if Alabama does not win it? And barring obviously a crucial injury in a semifinal but how would you characterize if they don't win it?
For anybody to beat Alabama at this stage of the season, I think it's beyond a mild upset. I think it's a major upset for anybody to beat Alabama in December and January.
Hey, fabulous stuff, Rich. We really enjoyed this. Excellent job. Of course, college football editor, reporter for Campus Insiders. Enjoy everything that's ahead of us, Rich. It's going to be fun.
Thanks, guys. Happy New Year.
All right. Happy New Year to you, too. Boy, he was great, huh?
Yeah, that was some awesome stuff, man, jumping around.
That guy knows his stuff.
Yeah. In
about
the
12 first-rounders on Alabama.
12? Dude, that is scary. But
think about that for a minute. 12. That's more than half your starters.
Right. 12. That's my. And you didn't say getting drafted because now.
No, I said first rounders.
Exactly. So if you talk about maybe third and fourth round, the whole dang team, man. Oh, that's incredible. That's incredible. But what about USC? He says,
I think USC will beat Penn State. Absolutely.
Darnold kid, man.
Yeah. You know what? I got to tell you, other than the Final Four, the only game that I'll watch will be the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
None of the other games interest me. They really don't. I'm sorry, but they just don't.
Harbaugh doesn't draw you into that one? You won't even take a peek at Florida State,
no,
Michigan?
I don't care. Nope.
Come on.
I have no interest in it.
It's the Orange Bowl. I mean, it actually has a name that you can say, Capital One Orange Bowl.
The only thing that's good about it is, you know, the game's tomorrow night.
This is true.
So at least, you know, but –
you're tuning in.
So, I'll tell you what. I'll watch it when you and I are on the air tomorrow. We'll have it on in front of us.
There you go. Exactly.
All right, but, I mean, that's the only way I'm watching it.
Well, at least I got you to tune in. We'll find out.
And, listen, I love college football, so I don't mean to say, but
– yeah, you want to – I understand what you're saying because there are a lot of games that you know, Arkansas 7-5, Virginia Tech 9-4, 22nd ranked, and they're in the pole bucket – down south backyard bowl. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
But you know, like, are you going to watch like Alabama take on Oklahoma? Now that's on Monday. I don't have it. You know, that game doesn't do anything for me. Yeah. I don't really want to see Auburn play Oklahoma.
Yeah, I would agree. But if it's on and I'm not doing anything.
Now, if they want to send this to New Orleans to go cover the game, then I'll go and I'll watch it and then I'll enjoy that part of it.
You're all in, huh?
I'm all in. Yes, I am.
Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans, Louisiana. Yeah, that would be a wee bit of fun, Grant. I think, some gumbo.
No.
Oh, come on.
I hate the food in New Orleans.
What?
I absolutely.
Oh, my God. Everybody, plug your ears.
No.
Do they have a cuss button in here? Oh, my goodness.
I took Star in New Orleans for the first time 2 years ago, right? She had never been in New Orleans.
Okay.
And I told her, I go, listen, when you get here, you're not going to be able to eat, so bring your protein bars and bring everything with you.
What?
And she walks into the hotel room. She's got all this stuff. And so I go, well, all right, let's go get something to eat. So we go out, and, like, we had a great time. We really did have a good time, but she's like, boy, you're right. You just can't eat anything down here. I go, I know, I told you. I go, no wonder everybody's 500 pounds down there.
Hey, it's rich. The food is very rich. But
not my style.
When we were at the Ritz-Carlton, we got in late. I looked on the menu. I'm like, okay, let's see what we can get.
You got some
here.
Gumbo?
No, I did not.
Oh.
But I looked and I said, oh, po' boy sandwich. Okay.
How much that cost?
I can't remember. It was spendy. It was a prawn but boy, it was like 10 prawns, big ones, just laid across a hoagie.
Really?
Oh, I was in the room, feet.
Is that right?
Twinkling my feet, watching some Sports Center. I was living a dream, man. It was really good.
Wow. Now, you didn't go down and pick up your food from room service because did I tell you this story? We're in Milwaukee, or maybe it wasn't Milwaukee, but we are, I can't remember where we were, but we're at a beautiful hotel, so it wasn't Milwaukee.
Right.
And, all right. So I get in the elevator.
Sorry, Wisconsin.
And there's Lawrence Funderburk.
El Boogie.
There's Lawrence Funderburk with the tray in his hand and the beautiful silver china on top of his food.
In the middle of the night?
In the middle of the elevator. So listen to this. I go, what's going on, man? And you know Lawrence is a little different. And I love Lawrence, but, you know, he's a little different.
Yes.
He goes, oh, I just went down to room service to get my food. I go like this. I go, you went to room service to get your food? He goes, yeah, I don't want to pay the $3 delivery charge. So I went down and picked it up myself. I'm like, you're kidding me, right?
I mean,
we're in a 5-star hotel, and there's Lawrence Funderburk holding the tray with the beautiful silver, you know, china on top, you know what I mean, to cover the food. And I'm just like, okay, dude. Okay, so you went down to room service. All the way to get down there. I go, I'm just wondering, how often somebody says when they call room service, oh, I'll come down to the kitchen and pick it up.
Oh, man. El Boogie, he was a different one.
To save $3. Is that a classic or what?
I have one to beat that, actually. I don't know if we have time. Do we have time?
Well, we'll be coming back. It's not like we're off the air. You have a great story when we come back?
I think the people will enjoy it.
Somebody said New Orleans food is bad as the Saints defense and overpriced.
Whoa.
Hey, listen, my wife and I, you can ask her. When you see Star on Saturday at the game, you can ask her. Just go, hey.
This is because she doesn't like fried food? Because they do serve a lot of fried
food. Yeah, we don't eat. That's not our style. I'll eat fried food a little bit, but I don't like Cajun.
I'm not
into that type of food, you know?
Spicy?
Not really. Not my cup of tea.
I'm not super spicy, but I like a little kick to it. Got to have a little kick to your food.
Nah, man. You know, so anyway, so we survived.
Oh, I know. Protein bars?
Yeah, well, it's good, you know.
Protein bars and water for the Napiers. Room 505.
You know, Star's 100 pounds. She don't need to eat that much anyway.
Wabbit.
Exactly. Give her a little lettuce, a couple carrots, you know, a little tomato, maybe a hard-boiled egg. She's good to go.
Low maintenance.
Right?
Oh, Star.
No, really, we go out to dinner, and it's great because it's like literally I only have to buy for one meal, and it's just me.
So I
love going out to dinner
with
her. I go, what are you going to eat? She goes, I'm not hungry. I'm not going to eat. I'm like, you're not going to eat? Come on, we went all the way out to dinner. Nah, you know, I'm like, would you get something, please? And, nah, really, you know, I'm really good. I go, you're not going to eat? No. I'm like, okay, so it's just me. We'll be right back, and we'll get to Doug's story when we return. I don't know about you, but I just got a lot of wabbits on my Twitter line.
Star's the best, man. Wabbit, wabbit, wabbit.
All right, so what's your story, dude?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so you can't make this stuff up. El Boogie is the best. But so we're on the bus, and I'm sitting down, and I think I was about to talk to her. I was talking to my wife, just got done, putting on my headphones, listening to him. And you know how the seats are a little bit staggered. It's not right across from you usually.
Right.
So out of the corner of my eye, I see somebody kind of nodding their head, and I look over, and it's L.
Lawrence Funderburk.
Or Lawrence Funderburk. And I look at him, and he's got headphones on. And then I look back, but I take a quick second look back because he had two pairs of headphones on, Grant. I can't make it up. He had a pair over a pair. So I looked, and I stared at him until he obviously felt it, and he looked at me, and I'm just like,
come on.
Yeah, I point at him, I'm like, you know, like roll your window down. And he looks at me, he's like, he takes both of them off, and he's like, yo, what's up, D? And I said, what the hell, man? What's up with the earphones, man? You just got to tell me. He said, I got to hear white noise. And that was my face, too. If you guys could see Grant's face, he's going, the look is what the hell. So I said, white noise, I'm not hip. Can I hear? So he hands them to me, and I listen, and this is what it sounds like.
Come on.
It was on repeat.
No, you're kidding me, right?
I'm not kidding you. I think it was a fan. And you know, I think L had lived in the city, so he needed to hear stuff constantly.
Oh no, you know that whenever we traveled, he'd always take a big fan with him.
Yes.
And for the hotel room. Not a little fan. I mean like a big cardboard box with a huge fan in it.
One day I was looking out the window and I asked Pete. Who's the fan for, man? I see it every trip.
Yep.
And we're talking the big floor models, ladies and
gentlemen. Oh, yeah, we're not talking about just a little portable fan. It was portable, but, I mean, it was a big fan in a big box.
Yes, and the reason is, I believe, because he had to hear that noise. So that was my El Boogie story. Love you, El Boogie.
Wow.
Oh, man.
No words for that one.
I didn't at the time.
Wow.
We have stories. We couldn't even tell them all on the air, man. Those were.
But I'll never forget though, him in the elevator, heading back up to his room because he went to room service to save the $3 delivery charge.
Hey, he's L pinches him hard, man, and bless him because I know he saved all that money he made.
All right, if you want to call the show, 339-1140. 800-920-1140. So tomorrow, we're back with you at 3. We got a full show. If you're joining us a little bit late, it's been a real fun show today. Jerry Reynolds was on with us. We had Coach Dave Yeager. We just heard from Rich Sermonello from Campus Insiders. And guess what? Coming up at 6 o'clock, John Schumann, NBA TV and NBA.com. So we've got all of that. NBA basketball tonight, some very interesting games going on with, I think, led by a game, and I talked to Isaiah Thomas about this yesterday. They're playing the Cavaliers, the Celts, and it's 29-23 with a minute and a half left in the first. Miami is at Charlotte. The Grizzlies, who were here on Saturday, lead the Thunder with 10 seconds left in the first, 27-21. Sixers and Jazz a little bit later. Raptors are at the Suns, and Dallas is in L.A. to take on the Lakers.
How about those Raptors last night? I mean, just getting throttled in the first quarter. I mean, just beat down. And then come back and make it a ball game. I think that's their style. They will it'll be interesting to talk to John Schumann and talk about them and see where he – you know, because right now they're second. They're just behind the Cavaliers. But do they really have a chance to come out of the East?
No, I don't think so. Barring injury, I don't think so. Now, they are 22-9. And the Kings, by the way, have handed them two of their nine losses.
This is true.
And the Cavaliers are 23-7. So they're a game and a half back. Yeah. But in a seven-game series, I don't see it.
I don't either. And because your best player in LeBron James can guard their best player in DeMar DeRozan if need be, and absolutely, I would think, shut him down because LeBron is just – and he controls the tempo and a lot of different things. I was just talking to my son. We were driving home from San Francisco about this, and we were talking about LeBron, and I was just saying you marvel that he's not necessarily a scorer, Grant, but he is moving up the scoring chart at an incredible pace. He's more Magic than he is Michael, but man, you just got to marvel. This could be his seventh straight finals if he makes it this year.
I'll tell you a team that I would keep my eye on if I'm Sacramento right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a team that is behind you, and that's the New Orleans Pelicans.
Mm.
They got Tyreke Evans back. They've won 4 or 5.
Okay.
They just beat the Clippers. They beat the Mavs. They beat the Heat. They beat the Sixers. They lost a tough game to the Thunder.
Yes, 13-21.
That's right. And so that's only 3 games back in the loss column of Sacramento and Denver. And here's the other thing. Kings have to play the Pelicans, you know, I think 3 more times.
I think you're right. The only thing that worries me about them is injury.
Anthony, I understand. No, I'm with you.
Injury, Tyreke, knee injury, that's the only thing. Other than that, I think you're right because there are probably Kings, Nuggets, Trailblazers, Pelicans, Lakers, and if the Timberwolves can make some type of move and get it together, they're bit back. But all those teams will be fighting for that eighth spot, and it's going to be interesting as you play each other going through the year watching them. But agreed, the Pelicans team is an interesting one.
Yeah, the Kings beat them earlier in the year, 102-94, and they don't go to New Orleans until later in the year. I know they come. I know New Orleans is here in February. I don't know the date off the top of my head, but it's right before the All-Star break. And then Sacramento goes to New Orleans. I think they only go to New Orleans once this year, so they only play, you know, 3 times. Mm-hmm. But and then there's Denver, and we're going to look at Michael Malone's Denver Nuggets coming up for you on Tuesday, right? Is the game on Tuesday the 3rd?
Yeah.
Okay. And do I think Denver's a great team? No. Do I think the Kings are a great team? No. Do I think New Orleans is a great team? No. These teams are all, you know what I mean? They're right there among one another. But when I look at Denver, you know, no one's really talking about them, and they shouldn't talk about them like they talk about Golden State, San Antonio, Houston. That's not the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm trying to make is they've got the exact same record as Sacramento. And you know what? They just beat the Timberwolves. They just won in L.A. against the Clippers. And they're getting the Clippers at the right time with their injuries. They've got some pretty nice wins. You know, they have some pretty nice wins. And they have the exact same record as Sacramento.
You know, they have an interesting they got a lot of bigs. Nurkic, Hernan Gomez,
yeah.
Jokic, and obviously Fareed, Gallinari, but Jamal Murray, who
he's a good-looking rookie.
He is a very good-looking rookie, and we will get a first-hand look at him. It's 5:42, time for a retirement checkup. Call David Hedger at Granite Bay Asset Management Group, 791-1737.
All right, we'll come right back. Let's get to some phone calls when we return right here on Sports 1140. 339-1140 and 800-920-1140, Grant Napier and Doug Christie, and we are going to take some phone calls right now with Doug. Hello, Doug. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I want to go back a little bit earlier in the broadcast. You guys were talking about analytics. Yep. I've been a basketball fan since I was a child. My first basketball love was the 74 Golden State Warriors. And so, you know, I've been watching ball for a long time. I'm just not a fan of this high-octane three-point shooting. And that's just me. And, you know, maybe if my team, the Kings, were winning a little bit more and they were winning like that, I probably would be. But, it just seems like that the league has – you know, gone from one extreme of, you know, the bad boy style Pistons in the 90s to where we are today. Is this something that's cyclical or is this here to stay?
I think it's cyclical, but the ratings are the highest they've ever been. The league is generating more money than ever before. The league is as popular as ever before. And if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think the biggest issue, and you bring up a good point, Doug, and I'll ask Doug Christie, when you say, is it cyclical? I'm looking at the way the game is being played on the AAU level and youth basketball, and to me the game is mirroring what we're seeing in the NBA, Doug, where we're not seeing guys playing with their back to the basket. And so if it's not being played that way on a youth level, in a high school level, in a college level, then how does it translate into the NBA? How would you answer that question, Doug, what the caller said?
You know, when I listened to the caller, he said – It started one way, and now it's the total polar opposite. I think ultimately what we're going to do is we're going to find some place in the middle where skill levels, and you're seeing guys with crazy skills like Steph Curry and what Golden State is doing, but you're also going to see big guys who continue to do what they do, but they're gonna find a way to get inside. It's not just going to totally, I don't think, stay the way that it is. There's going to be a little bit of meeting in the middle. But to Grant's point, AAU basketball, I mean, just constantly playing, not necessarily working on skill level and fundamentals and those type of things, that's going to ultimately have to change.
So then, you know, looking at it from the Kings vantage point, you know, looking at a long-term plan, Where does this team – how does this affect this team going forward?
It affects it big time because I think that Vlade Divac and his staff, you know, are going to have to do what the other general managers around the league are doing, and that is they're going to have to load up on three-point shooters because that's just the way the game's played. And the analytics – you brought up the word analytics, Doug. The analytics are showing and to a degree proving – that if you're not shooting a lot of threes and making a lot of threes, you can't win in this day and age in the NBA.
And if that's the case, and if three-point shooters are at a premium, it's not like, you know, people are giving them away. So, you know, where do the Kings
– Well, you draft them. They got a very good three-point shooter coming over next year from Serbian Bogdanovic, who's part of the trade with the Phoenix Suns for Marquese Chris. So he's coming over next year. He's a very good three-point shooter. I mean –
And also, player development is going to be at a premium.
Great point.
Because that is going to be where the Kings are able to excel. When you look at a small market team, say San Antonio, they've done a really good – now, you've got a star in Tim Duncan. You had one in David Robinson. But then you get a Manu Ginobili. You get a Tony Parker. You get a Kawhi Leonard. And I use Kawhi as an example. The player development of Kawhi has really taken them to the next level and allowing them to really continue on the Spurs way. What is the Kings way going to be? And then developing that talent into the Kings way is going to be ultra important.
And, you know, lastly, and I'll let you guys go, this is where my hope is where these young rookies that are being, you know, shuttled back and forth between Sacramento and Reno, I hope that there is a method to that madness and those guys are developing and they're shooters. That's what I'm hoping.
Well, I think that Malachi Richardson is a shooter. And thank you, Doug, for the call. And I Doug and I were talking about this, you know, in between break. Listen, I don't sit here to profess that I know more than Dave Yeager because I don't, and I don't even go there. I have the utmost respect for Dave Yeager. I mean, his record, wherever he's been, speaks for itself.
Yep.
And the people that I've talked to that have worked with Dave Yeager, both presently and the past, you know, rave about him. But I'll tell you this, it's not going to break my heart if in a couple weeks I see Malachi Richardson getting Ben McLemore's minutes.
Not at all. Young Malachi works. You see him working. Does he need to continue to learn and understand all the different things that go with the NBA? Yes, but there's one thing that you see in him. There's that dog mentality that when he starts competing, he doesn't care about that guy across from him. He attacks him. He shoots the ball. He just goes after it. And is there a lot of learning that still needs to take place? Yes, but I like the talent that I see in him.
All right. If you want to call the show, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. I've always said that, you know, professional sports, when you're in a professional, is about consistency.
Yes.
You know, and in basketball, you play 82 games a year. Now, you can't be great 82 games a year, and you're going to have some off nights, but it is about consistency. And right now, you know, with Ben McLemore, it's like a box of chocolates. You don't know what you're getting from night to night. Same thing with Willie Cauley-Stein. You know, Willie had a play last night, which he just looked awful. You know, I mean, Willie's out there to do two things, in my opinion. Alter shots and rebound.
Yeah.
Forget scoring. If he scores, okay. But that's not what he's out there for.
That is something that you and I have talked about many times. And that's when you start to become a really good team, in my opinion. When you could look down and you could say, what am I going to get from Chris? What am I going to get from Peja? Vlade,
yeah.
Mike,
yep.
Bobby, Doug, and now, what does it vacillate a little bit? Yeah, it does. But for the most part, you knew. You could pencil it in. You could pin it in and say, this is what I'm going to get. And when it starts to fluctuate at a time where Coach Yeager doesn't really have any idea, so that's when you see him drastically having to change lineups. Like last night, all of a sudden we came out in the second half and there was a whole different lineup because he's searching for something that you need that to speak to your point, Grant. The level of consistency in our players has to continue to rise.
All right. If you want to add on to that, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Doug and I are going to be with you until 7 o'clock. We'll be back with you again tomorrow, and we'll get you ready for the holiday weekend. And then the Kings wrap up 2016 with a game Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. And then their next game is in 2017 against Denver. And that right there looks like a pretty big game to start off the new year at Denver, doesn't it?
Yes, because, you know, regardless of what happens tomorrow, and then if you look at whatever Denver's going to be doing between that time, this is the team that is right behind you.
Yep.
I believe, if I saw it correctly,
they have the same record as Sacramento. They're 14-18.
14-18. So that's telling you everything that you need right now. This is a team that you are going to be dueling with. You're going into their building. These are, you know, you talk about message games, and do the Kings quite understand that? I'm not really sure, but you're going to have to start understanding and sending message like, look, we are better than you are. We'll see you again, and we're going to smack you again. That has to start taking place.
All right, so we've got that coming up. We'll talk with John Schumann, NBA.com, NBA TV. We'll do that in the next hour. And, of course, some open segments for you to get in at 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. The Kings are 14-18, final game of the year 2016 on Saturday.
It is 5:55, time for a retirement checkup. Call David Hedger at Granite Bay Asset Management Group, 791-1737.
All right, we'll come back. Final hour of the show, Sports 1140, KHDK.